Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, August 12th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Franciscan Heights Senior Community, located off Exit 7, I-90, Rensselaer, offering maintenance-free, professionally managed community for seniors. DePaulHousing.com for photos and information. Joining us this afternoon is Dr. Rebecca Stetzer, a geriatrician from the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Medical Center. Dr. Stetzer takes a geriatric 5Ms approach to the evaluation and treatment of patients. We'll find out all about that concept today. Meanwhile, if you have a question, give us a call and get in line. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Rebecca Stetzer and your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is Dr. Rebecca Stetzer, a geriatrician with a special interest in dementia care. Dr. Stetzer practices with the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med, a New York State designated center of excellence for Alzheimer's disease. She takes a geriatric 5Ms approach to evaluation and treatment. She works closely with the interdisciplinary team at the Alzheimer's Center to focus on patient and care partner priorities and goals of care. She is also a clinician educator dedicated to teaching geriatric principles to medical students, residents, and fellows. To participate in our discussion today, get going. Get on the phone. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Rebecca Stetzer, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
It's been a while now, yeah?
It has been.
You moved locations.
I did, yes.
So tell me about the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med.
So we are based out of the neurology department, and we have a multidisciplinary team, meaning so a neurologist and now me as a geriatrician, and we have a new nurse practitioner that just joined us. We also have an interdisciplinary team in that we have two RNs who are very skilled, as well as two social workers who just bring so much knowledge and care to both our patients and their caregivers.
I find that so interesting that you have social workers on your team. You figure, okay, Alzheimer's, neurology, check. You are a geriatrician, check. But social workers as well. Who coordinates? Who's the manager of the team? Who's in charge?
I would really say it's a group effort. It depends, you know, what each family is coming in with, what kind of needs they have. For many patients, they come in, I think you don't really need a doctor today. You need help with managing supports and learning more about the disease and figuring out how we can help you navigate these changes. And that's when our social workers and RNs really do a lot to manage care.
This is a New York State designated center of excellence. What exactly are we talking? Obviously, you're good, but beyond that, what does that designation mean?
Well, we're excellent, but...
Well, very, very good. All right, fine. Yes, you're excellent. It says so right in the title.
So what that is, that's actually a state program where you get recognized for providing a certain level of care, and then there are certain measures that we have to hold up to. So some of that has to do with the way and the numbers of people that we're supporting, but a big part of that is outreach. And so that's, again, where actually our social work team is really active, getting into different primary care offices and different care locations throughout the Capital District and beyond to educate people about the disease, ways to manage things, when they should look for referrals.
We're joined today by Dr. Rebecca Stetzer, and today's show is about geriatrics and dementia. 800-348-2551 is the number. All right, what are these 5Ms?
So the 5Ms of geriatrics, that's just a nice way to think about the approach to care of older adults.
Yeah.
You know, because in many ways you go into the doctor and you focus on different diseases. We really like to step back and try to look at somebody as a person as a whole and make sure that we're managing whatever medical problems they have, but also looking at aging as a whole and how to best support people. So of the 5Ms, you know, the one we sort of begin and end with is what matters most. So looking at to what are the major goals somebody has, either about their health or about other things that they're having difficulty achieving. And are there things we can do to help with that? The next we look at is multi-complexity, which can include some of the different medical problems they have, as well as sort of the complex situations we can all get into. For medications, both looking to see, are there too many medications? Are some of the problems medication side effects? For mobility, looking to first look for fall risk and make sure people are being safe, but also is there mobility that we need to focus on and make sure that we're preserving their ability to be active. And then mentation refers to both cognitive issues as well as mental health, because they're really closely entwined.
We're joined today by Dr. Rebecca Stetzer of Albany Med. The number to call here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. When you're ready, we're ready for you. The family is key in what you do, right? So the matrix between your team and the family, if there is a family of the geriatric patient, that's paramount, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. And it's always really hard when people come in for the first time without a family member or close friend. Because as you can imagine, if we're evaluating a memory complaint, you might not remember all of the details. So it's really helpful to have somebody there who can fill in some of those gaps.
You know, when you are looking at dementia and Alzheimer's, I've heard that you set a baseline for the progression of the illness. What if someone comes in who's already fairly far along? How do you set that baseline?
Well, we just sort of start with where we're at. Some of that is some of the history that we get, how much education there was, what kind of employment there was in the past. And again, that comes to those care partners and saying, oh, well, this is how my loved one used to be. You know, if it's somebody who was an engineer and they're having math trouble, that's really different than if it's somebody who was never very good at math.
Yeah.
And so we're always trying to judge that.
So change. That would not be a good baseline for me. All right. Fair enough. Number here is 800-348-2551. Let's grab a call before we take a break, and we'll go to Gansvoort. Martha, you're on.
Hi. I'll just quickly describe my background. 78 years old. My mother died at 80 with Alzheimer's. I've been active all my life. I ran in the first 1,500 meters in the women's nationals. I've been a vegetarian since 14. I've recently become a vegan now to avoid Alzheimer's if I can. My right knee is bone on bone from not stretching. I do the Miranda Esmond White exercises as often as I can, walk a mile with my dogs. And my problem is right now, every time I sit for 15, 20 minutes, I can bear, my legs are so stiff that I can't even get to the phone rapidly. And of course they loosen up, but I just feel as if I am doing everything right. And why on earth should my legs be stiff like this?
That sounds really tough. First, I have to say, with your background, I'd like to be you when I grow up. That sounds really amazing. Sometimes, you know, part of that stiffening is part of age. We know that our fibers stiffen up, and so stretching and those sorts of activities, yoga, can be really important for staying active. It may be that if you've had a change in activity level, that your body is feeling that as well. But I would say, you know, the most important thing is to keep moving, staying warm, and continuing those stretching exercises. And if you're having trouble with what you're usually doing, sometimes stepping back and looking to see, does your body need some sort of different activity now? Do you need to engage in something that's more focused on stretching and maybe core strength?
Martha.
Well, my doctor wondered if it could be an enzyme in my muscles, because I had I thought maybe the veins, but the doctor at the hospital said I quote, your arteries are beautiful. I mean, they did some extensive tests, so it wasn't that, and I'm still so puzzled.
Yeah, it sounds like a difficult situation. It might be worth trying to see somebody to look more into that. Sometimes our physical therapists do a really good job in helping to bridge some of those gaps.
All right, Martha, thank you very much for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Our guest today, Dr. Rebecca Stetzer, a geriatrician with the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med. Doesn't begin with M, begins with L. How about loneliness? A couple times a year, I'll do a show with the guys from the New York State Office of the Aging, or for the Aging, I guess it is. And one of the things we talk about every time is loneliness and how that affects the psyche and the intellectual ability and everything else in older patients.
Yeah, it's absolutely a huge issue, especially as people get more and more isolated. And we really saw this during the COVID pandemic when people became more isolated. Frequently, that's when some of the memory concerns really start, is when people are isolated. We know that social interaction, mental interaction is really important to maintaining our cognition as well as our moods. So loneliness is a really big issue. Sometimes it's, you know, when we're looking at taking care of people, we talk about getting involved in the community, getting to, you know, senior centers or libraries will have great sorts of community events. Also getting together with friends. I think playing cards is one of the best things you can do, right? So finding ways to interact with others really does help.
Let's take a quick break here. Dr. Rebecca Stetzer is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number, or voxpop at wamc.org. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. Geriatrics and Dementia Care today with Dr. Rebecca Stetzer from the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med. Before we go back to our phone lines, this email from Stephanie in Wilton. Stephanie writes, I have normal pressure hydrocephalus with no shunt. With this disease, does it mean I should plan on a future dementia diagnosis?
So normal pressure hydrocephalus, which, you know, for our listeners is a condition where you have an increase of fluid in the brain that does lead to some shrinkage of the brain tissue. With that, one of the components that we do tend to see are some cognitive changes. So that can certainly influence things. You know, when we're looking at NPH as a whole, usually the changes in walking are more prominent. But yeah, with a diagnosis like that, it would be, I think, helpful to be cared for by a team that is expert in that.
This email from Heather, and then we'll jump back to the phones. Can you, the doctor, comment on different ways dementia presents itself in different types of dementia, like Lewy body, Parkinson's, vascular, et cetera? My mom has Parkinson's dementia and seems to be a gentler form of dementia.
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, when we're talking about dementia, it's really a clinical diagnosis, meaning that there's a change in memory and thinking to the degree that it impairs ability to function independently. So needing help with medications, with financial management, shopping and cooking. And so there are a number of different causes, Alzheimer's disease being the most common, but we also see it from vascular disease, which can be either small strokes or damage to small blood vessels, or Lewy body or Parkinson's disease. Lewy body and Parkinson's are sort of along a similar continuum where there's influence of the Lewy bodies on the brain causing movement changes as well as cognitive changes. And with the Lewy body, we see the cognitive changes earlier. With the Parkinson's disease, that can be something as the disease progresses, sometimes not until much later stages.
What are Lewy bodies?
So they're proteins that form in the brain that interfere with nerve function.
So as opposed to Alzheimer's, which is plaque, yeah?
Right. So those are amyloid plaques. So they're different forms of interference in the brain functioning. And it just sort of depends which parts there, how it interferes.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Let's jump back to the phones. Dr. Rebecca Stetzer is our guest. Let's go to Colin E. Kelly, you're on.
Oh, hi, Dr. Stetzer. Just a quick question. We have older loved ones who are beginning to experience memory loss. What are some of the first things that we can do to support them?
Yeah, so a great question. And it's interesting when we experience working with families and caregivers, such a big part of what we do is supporting our caregivers. You know, as you're looking at loved ones who are starting to have memory changes, the first is sort of that leaning in to help with areas where there may be safety concerns. You know, I get worried about medications that are mismanaged, forgotten, or taken twice. Looking at driving ability, which can be a really hard thing to talk about, but of course so important because it's you know, your own safety as well as those on the others on the road. So if you have some concerns, you know, hopping in the car with your loved one, having them drive you around and see how you feel. And then if you are concerned, bringing them into their doctor, you know, for their primary, even to start taking a look at things, you know, is it that their medications could be influencing how they're thinking, or their medication side effects, because there are a number that really can impair cognitive functioning. You know, are they developing some depression, and maybe that's showing up as a memory problem? It's not a primary memory problem itself, but depression can focus that way. So both the leaning in of care and then making sure that they're getting evaluated.
Kelly. Okay. Kelly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. You mentioned depression. Anger is another thing. We saw this in one of our loved ones who had Alzheimer's and was just going through those stages and sort of hit a plateau for a while and then just went off the cliff, basically. But there was a lot of anger there. Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with that?
It's hard. There's no real easy answer. It's going to really depend on the individual. You know, again, sometimes anger can be the presenting complaint for depression. So always evaluating for that. And then the other thing is really trying to look at seeing what is the anger from? Is it frustration from not being able to do things, not able to communicate what's going on? So I always try to step back and look at the why of the situation, because the anger may be very well justified.
Yeah.
Right. And so trying to see if you can help remedy the situation. And then, I mean, obviously, if it's violent, you have to think about other things. But, you know, I really think holding some space for these emotions, it's really hard to be going through this process of losing your memory and not able to do the things that you might have defined as who you were. And so just allowing some mourning for that, even as you try to focus on what still is there, still what can be done, you know.
Dr. Rebecca Stetzer, our guest today from the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med. Number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Cheshire, Massachusetts. Shelley, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Stetzer. This is, I'm calling to ask about, I have neuropathy. And just wondering whether you have any help in any medication or vitamin that might help with the balance. I've had physical therapy. I'm just wondering whether any of the B complex or B12 helps with any of the balance issues or numbness that I feel in my feet.
So, I mean, neuropathy can have a number of different causes. Certainly, deficiencies in B vitamins can be one of those. So if those are low, a supplement is appropriate. If your levels are normal, then they're not going to be helpful. If it hasn't been done already, you always want to make sure that you go through an evaluation just to see if there's any identifiable source to it. But then, you know, once you're going on, I'm glad to hear the physical therapy can be very helpful with gait and balance training, using a cane, which nobody loves to hear, but that actually really does help with stability and moving forward. There are a number of medications that we use to help with the pain. They all come with potential side effects, and none of them really take away that numbness sensation. So that can be a little bit tough.
Shelley.
Right. Yeah. Thank you very much. I didn't really want to take like gabapentin, which I hear is one of the medications that are prescribed, but you've been helpful. I have a B vitamin that's a deficiency, so I've just bought some B complex and will start to take them. So it's been very helpful. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Shelley, appreciate the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's funny, I think the older you get, most of us, the more medications we end up taking. Mm. Managing those can, as you have alluded to a couple times here, can be very difficult and sometimes dangerous. Mm-hmm. Is someone on your team on that, or can you only just offer advice?
Well, right now, I mean, it's mainly when people come in that we review their medications. I'm always looking for prescribing cascades, which happens more than you would think, where one medication is started, you develop side effects from that medication, which is misinterpreted as a different condition, and then you get put on another medication to manage that. And so sometimes it can really be a whole tangle to look through all of that. But, you know, sitting down and really trying to get through that is one of the things that we try to do. It can be hard to do in a busy primary care practice. So yeah. We really try to provide that big picture to support people as much as we can.
Dr. Rebecca Stetzer is our guest. At the beginning, when I asked you what exactly a New York State designated center of excellence was, you said part of it's based on volume of clients. How many patients do you have every year?
I wish that my social worker, Melissa, were sitting right here with me because she'd be able to answer you in a heartbeat. I don't know the number.
Idea.
I know that it is that they have goals to try to keep us. I mean, the goal, right, is to reach as many families as we can. So we're always looking to do that.
Just a gut feeling here. What percentage of people out there are never getting any care for this?
Oh, I would say a very large percent. I mean, there's.
Isn't that a problem for society?
Well, it's certainly not ideal. I think that in many places where you've got family that naturally lean in and support people, that's really the best care that we can give. We talk about medications that we can use and a new one we're starting to use. But the truth is none of the medications are really profoundly helpful. And so it's all that supportive care that really makes the biggest difference.
We're joined today by Dr. Rebecca Stetzer, and back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number to Coleraine, Massachusetts. Lynn, you're on. Hey, Lynn, you got to turn that radio down there, buddy. Oh, Zach the engineer, that vein in his temple is popping. All right, Lynn, I'm sorry. Call back next time and then have your radio down. And this is a little reminder for all of you who are on hold. When you get on, turn that radio down, okay? Okay. To Niskayuna and Robin, you're on.
Hi. I like what the doctors had to say, but I'm going to say this, that, you know, family members may have their own agenda, and when you bring someone in or sort of, use the term, you may be bullying them, whether you mean to or not, to go in to get an evaluation, that person may not do well in that evaluation. So, remember, there's a baseline of what is considered competent, and then there's a what your family may think of you, you know, what you should behave like. And if you're an adult child, you may not even have seen your parents for a long time, and they may not have seen you, and they may have just changed.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And really that, you know, there are a couple things that one is that trying to get multiple points of information are important. So hearing both from our patients and their caregivers, especially if there are multiple family members or friends. But we also talk about that this is really a diagnosis over time. And so it's really helpful, you know, if I see somebody initially and then a few months later, and we can track what those changes are. Because you're right, sometimes concerns come in and then over time things end up being pretty stable, which gives us important information as well.
All right, Robin, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Rebecca Stetzer is with us today from the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med. And let's see here. We're going to go to Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on.
Has there been an increase in arthritis since the COVID epidemic? And what about alpha-lipoic acid for neuropathy?
So first with the COVID, I'm wondering if you're asking about an increase in memory issues since COVID, because that is something that we do see some people who really had a terrible course of COVID, maybe even as a part of long COVID, will have some cognitive changes. So there is some influence from that. I don't know specifically if arthritis changes.
Okay.
In terms of alpha-lipoic acid for neuropathy, that can be something. There is some moderate evidence to suggest that can be helpful with some of the negative symptoms. You just have to be careful when you're getting those kind of supplements over the counter to make sure you're always getting something that's USP certified so that it has been validated what's in the medication and that common pesticides are not.
All right, Jim, thanks very much for the call. 800-348-2551 to Washington County we go. It's Mary. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Mary.
Hi.
I want to find out what medicines you use to treat Alzheimer's, prescription medications.
Yeah, so we have a small handful that we use. There's one class called acetylcholinesterase inhibitors. And what they do is help keep up levels of certain neurotransmitters in the brain that commonly become depleted in dementia. And we use this for multiple different types. I like to say those help some people some of the time. Our studies are not very impressive in terms of how much benefit that they have. But it does seem that some people tend to respond to them more than others. We do have to be careful about potential side effects and interactions with those. We have another medication called memantine that we use later on in the disease. Also, it works on a different neurotransmitter, and it can help stabilize things a little bit. Usually, you don't have a profound improvement. We do have a new medication out, and actually another one that's just in the process of being approved. The new one's called lecanemab. It's a monoclonal antibody. And what it's been shown to do in studies is do a very good job of clearing the amyloid plaques in the brain. And so over the 18-month of trials, they really got down to just about zero.
Interesting. But that doesn't necessarily mean the symptoms go away, though, right?
Correct. And so what those studies showed is, in terms of cognition, it slowed decline. And the slow of decline was modest. It was statistically significant. If it's clinically significant, it's hard to say. They sort of estimate that if we're looking at cognition as perfect as 100 and you have impaired cognition that you rate as an 85, if you don't take any of the lecanemab after 18 months, you may drop to a 73. If you take it, you may drop to a 76.
Mm.
So again, not a profound difference, but the hope is, because it's disease modifying, that the longer term effects, if we can really slow disease for a longer amount of time, that it could have a profound impact.
Mary, thanks a lot for the call. Key here is finding it early. But as I understand, and I might be wrong, you really can't tell if someone had Alzheimer's until after they're dead.
So that actually used to be the case when I was in medical school. The only time we could diagnose it was at autopsy. We do have a lot more testing these days. And so, for example, for the lecanemab, we need to prove that there's an amyloid burden. So there's a PET scan that looks specifically for that can give us a specific diagnosis. You can also look for those proteins as well as other markers within the cerebrospinal fluid, so by a spinal tap. And now they're increasing blood biomarkers, so looking at, a simple blood test for diagnosis, which are promising. There are some out that can be ordered. I don't think any of them are paid for insurance yet, and we're still trying to figure out if those are good enough to be able to make that diagnosis and to use our new medications. But there's a lot that I think will be coming out in the next year or so that will really help us with diagnosis.
We're joined by Dr. Rebecca Stetzer from the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Couple questions about amyloid plaques, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. I think I read somewhere in the last week or two that some people have amyloid plaque buildup and never get Alzheimer's or any of these dementias. Am I wrong about that?
No. I mean, it's common for everybody with aging to develop some of these.
Yeah.
It tends to be more the burden of it, so how much of it. And then it sort of starts a cascade off of other difficulties that really is when we see the most symptoms from the Alzheimer's.
All right. Well, we're going to hold off on the second one here. We're going to take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Rebecca Stetzer is our guest, and we'll be back. Vox Pop. It's a Medical Monday. I'm Ray Graff. You're at home, and you know who you are. Dr. Rebecca Stetzer is our guest from the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's just do one now, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one's from Mandy. How to handle communication with caregivers? Do you have any suggestions for handling doctor and ER visits with an Alzheimer's patient and their caregiver? A continual issue we have is the caregiver having trouble providing accurate information with the Alzheimer's patient in the room at medical visits, since the Alzheimer's patient gets angry then and later if they are contradicted. We wish caregiver communications prior to in-person visits or without the Alzheimer's patient in the room were offered, but it's rarely offered, so the medical team is not always given complete or accurate information. Any ideas on that? And that's from Mandy.
Yeah, that's a great question. I know for our office, it's always helpful when there's a situation like that, when family members reach out to the office beforehand, either, you know, via the portal with my chart, just with an update, or call in and talk with one of our social workers so that we enter the appointment ready. We also use caregiver evaluation forms, which ask the caregivers to rate patients on different levels of functioning and different memory changes, as well as some behavioral changes, which provides part of that opportunity to write some of that down and then to write comments down as well. So I think that can be very helpful.
With regard to HIPAA and things like that, though, if a patient is of the mind that he or she is in their right mind and has it together, then presumably they want to be the one in charge of their health care. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not. In other words, health care proxies have to be a thing. And how can you work around that? And I think Mandy sort of alluded to it. If the patient is strong-willed, and I know a lot of older people who are extremely strong-willed, my grandmother was among them, how do you do it?
So it's a good point, sort of backing up having healthcare proxy. And I know that's something we ask about at the first visit and getting permission to have conversations with others. And so we do try to abide by that. You know, every once in a while, there's a situation of extreme safety concerns that we have to really think about how we're going to do the best for our patients. I think if you're in the emergency room, you know, either excusing yourself to step out, or if you have a moment to write something down to hand to the care team, that can be a way to communicate things. And I know frequently that caregivers will just sort of say, hey, can I talk to you for a second?
And that's legal and everything's fine?
Well, if they're coming in with patient, yep. I mean, as long as the patient has given us permission to talk with their loved ones, yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Rebecca Stetzer is our guest today. Back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is that telephone number. And let's see, we'll go to Rhinebeck, and it looks like it's Bob. Bob, you're on.
Hi, question for Dr. Stetzer. Dr. Stetzer, do you have any opinion on lion's mane, which I've heard and I've actually seen it in friends of mine. I don't know if it actually is just them thinking they're feeling better, but seems to help with their memory.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the lion's mane, and there's some other sort of supplements out there that are used sometime to enhance cognition. I haven't reviewed the lion's mane literature recently. I don't recall that there was anything that was terribly compelling, maybe some things that suggested help. But also, I don't think that one has a whole lot of harmful side effects. So if people try it and they feel better, I don't object. The main thing I would just look at is be sure to tell whoever you're seeing, just so the interactions can be checked, because the, you know, anything you're using as a supplement can interact with medications or have potential side effects. But for a lot of those, I think we don't have great evidence, but it might be because we haven't done the right studies.
Bob.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551, the number, to Utica. And Maria, you're on.
Dr. Stetzer. My brother has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Actually, I think it's mixed dementia, and he's been living with us this summer. Mm-hmm. What I have found is that he is aware of things, like if he has pain in his shoulder, you say it hurts, he'll point to his shoulder, but he won't say shoulder. Same thing at the table, like if he wants the mayonnaise, he points, and we say mayonnaise, and yes. So he knows what it is, but he's unable to verbalize. Do you have any suggestions how to manage to help him with word finding so that we're not trying to be mind readers all the time? It isn't that he isn't aware of what the objects are. He just can't verbalize it.
Yeah, that can certainly be a challenge and is a very common symptom of Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. Part of it is doing as you're doing and supporting things. If he's able to indicate and by pointing to things or picking them up, then he is still communicating. Sometimes we do find help from working with cognitive speech therapists. So a lot of our speech therapists have training and can specifically work with those sorts of difficulties with word finding, sometimes with some exercises, and sometimes it's techniques to help support the family in aiding communication. So that might be a good option.
Maria.
Right. We had actually suggested that, and we were told, oh, no, that's the disease. These things don't help. So maybe that isn't the case.
Second opinion.
Yeah, again, it depends where you are. I know at Albany Med, our speech therapy team is really phenomenal in helping. And certainly people get to the point where they may be too advanced for that to make a huge difference. But I always think it's worth trying.
All right, Maria, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Hillsdale, New York. And Julie, you're on.
Yes, my question is not Alzheimer's related. My question is relating benzodiazepine medications. I'm in my early 80s, and from what I understand, doctors do not like to prescribe Valium or other benzodiazepines in the older population. I'm wondering what your thinking is on that.
Oh, you picked one of my favorite topics. yes, benzodiazepines are definitely a medication that we all prefer to not see on the medication list. They're commonly used to treat anxiety, and we know that they can contribute to cognitive impairment. They impair balance and increase fall risk, and are one of the highest risk medications that we can prescribe. So when people come in on those, one of the first things I always try to do is try to reduce or have people come off of those medications, sometimes with some nice improvement in memory and thinking.
Julie.
Well, what medications would you suggest for somebody who might need one occasionally for anxiety, mild anxiety, or helping to sleep?
Well, that's going to depend on each individual and how much it is. But, I mean, we do have some medications that we use that are a little safer. Buspirone we use sometimes for anxiety. And with the sleep, there are a lot of different things that go into that. And sometimes there's some different cognitive behavioral therapy, meditation techniques, some different ways to get at that at a safer way.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. When you do your first workup of a new patient, do you ask about family history?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. So what percentage of those who come down with dementia later in life have family members who also have that issue?
So it's interesting. Certainly, if you have a family history, you have an increased risk of developing, say, Alzheimer's disease or really any of the or Lewy body as well. But really, it's still more common for it to happen sporadically. So I know people get very concerned when there is a family history, and we do watch that. But that's the rates still higher sporadically. It's as we look into doing more testing, right? So like as part of our evaluation for lecanemab, we check the APOE4 genes. And we do know if you've got copies of those, certainly that's going to increase that likelihood that you would develop it. But even that, when people get tested, not everybody who has those genes are going to develop Alzheimer's disease. So it's complicated.
And you can't do anything with CRISPR? No. Nothing yet?
Not that I'm aware of.
I mean, don't we want to stop this before it starts, right?
We absolutely do, yeah.
And we don't know exactly why some people get it and some people don't get it. The reason I ask sort of about family history, a lot of families stay in the same area generation after generation. Is this environmental or is this something the family eats over time? I mean, do we know why it happens?
So there's not a clear yes to that, but you did open up to one of my other favorite topics, which is looking at diet and movement. Because again, you know, we look at the genetics of it and it's not clear cut. We do have great evidence that a Mediterranean diet, as well as some other similar, really do decrease the likelihood of developing dementia. And I don't know if you've looked at the blue zones at all, but these areas in the world where there's a large number of people that live to 100.
Right.
And when you look in those populations, you know, if we look at a typical American population, by the time you get into your 90s, about 40% of people will have memory changes consistent with dementia.
Only 40%?
No, seriously, that's amazing.
I mean, it's a lot. But when you look at these blue zones at the folks who are 100, the rate is actually less than 10%. So clearly, there's a very important component to what we're eating. And as well there, I mean, part of it are the different types of foods, but it's the community, eating together with people, sort of talking to the loneliness, that people are involved in taking care of family members, preparing food. So there's that usefulness and purpose, and that they're active all the time, walking up and down the hill, up and down. So all of those different things that I know people groan when I say, well, let's talk about diet and exercise, right? it's profound in how important that is.
Dr. Rebecca Stetzer is our guest today, a geriatrician with the Alzheimer's Center at Albany Med. Number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Lenox, Massachusetts. Charles, you're up.
Yes. I have a question about the, you mentioned it briefly before, about the role of the tau protein blood test.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called, I think it's actually phosphorylated tau, the test for, they call it the p-tau test. And I read that has been approved now, has results equivalent to the results one gets from the cerebral spinal fluid test for amyloid, so you don't have to do a spinal tap, but that it's not indicated for preclinical Alzheimer's because there's no treatment, there's no drug treatment, I should say, for preclinical Alzheimer's. So I'm just wondering what the role of this would be. Would it be, for example, to distinguish maybe mild cognitive impairment of the elderly from true early Alzheimer's, or what is your thought about that?
You summarized that nicely. That's exactly right when we're looking at that. I think it can be helpful. So if somebody's coming in with mild cognitive impairment, which again is that clinical diagnosis of memory changes enough that people need to change the way they're doing things to stay independent, right? Like if you're driving to the grocery store needing to put the GPS on because sometimes you have some difficulty with wayfinding. But so something like that blood test could then let us know, do we think this mild cognitive impairment is due to early Alzheimer's disease or not. So at this point, that's going to be the usefulness, for us in clinical practice, the precision of a diagnosis can be helpful for planning. In terms of for using medications, we still haven't gotten approval to use the blood tests to proceed with our new medication. We still either have to have the CSF or the PET imaging.
Charles, thanks for the call. You mentioned GPS. This is one of my pet theories, is that things like GPS and using that for relying on that for directions, and the young people, they're all over this. It atrophies. You talk about physical exercise, mm-hmm. mental exercise. Does that play a role? In other words, finding your own directions, looking at a map, doing your own math, things like that. Is that something that will forestall any sort of dementia down the road?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we always look at is sort of that cognitive reserve. So protective factors for dementia include things like higher education, right? Or being really involved in, I think that can skew things a little bit, but I think, you know, engineers or looking at different trades where you have a lot of expertise about things, any things where you have a lot more cognitive functioning, you build up that reserve, right? The same idea, the brain isn't exactly a muscle, but you can think about it in that same way.
Mm.
We even talk about that in terms of hearing loss, which is actually probably the biggest modifiable risk factor that we know of in the U.S. for developing dementia.
Really?
And yes, so if you have hearing loss, get tested. And when you are recommended to get hearing aids, wear them every single day.
Do we know why this is?
You know, we don't have any studies exactly showing that, but certainly you can imagine that the brain isn't going to function well if it's having decreased input. And so part of that with the hearing aid is, one, you can't remember something you didn't hear, right? And then once you have the hearing aids, if you're not wearing them all the time, when you put them on, it may improve what you're hearing, but then your brain has to process it.
Yeah.
And if it's not used to getting that information, even like the background noise, right, then it's not going to be as robust at processing things. So, and interestingly, even like hearing hearing loss will contribute to balance problems and falls. So wearing those hearing aids really helps with a number of different domains.
Wow. We'll have to pick that one up on the next show because that's counterintuitive to me. I can see hearing aids improving your hearing, but balance is also in the inner ear. But hearing aid doesn't do that.
No, but, you know, when your brain's trying to figure out where you are in space, it's a complicated process and it's using a lot of different things. So, you know, one of the things, you know, we were talking about neuropathy before. If you have trouble feeling where you are, your brain's not going to have less information about where you are, right?
Yeah.
So keeping that balance. So that's why things like a cane can help, because you just tap the ground. It gives your brain more information. Same idea with the hearing aid, right? You're getting information about your environment based on what you're hearing. And so all of those little background noises really do help our brains figure these things out.
Let's grab another call here before we wrap it with Dr. Rebecca Stetzer. Let's go to Fern in Port Jervis. Hey, Fern, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if the doctor was familiar with something called paradoxical lucidity, where it's maybe a few hours or maybe even a day where somebody, an Alzheimer's patient, has real clarity. Has this been studied, and it could it possibly lead to treatment for Alzheimer's? Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it actually makes me think of an old Grey's Anatomy episode. Remember that show where somebody had a day of suddenly being lucid? I haven't seen a lot of that profound, you know, lucidity where things that, you know, come in and somebody is exactly as they are. Certainly see a lot of waxing and waning cognition, so good days and bad days. That can be a little bit hard to manage because you don't always know what you're going to get on that day. But that's something that we certainly look for and help us figure out, certainly with different types of dementias.
Fern.
Thank you. Well, my father had dementia, and I experienced that firsthand with him, where it was astounding from, you know, his ability from one day to the next. It was like he was another person again. So I was curious about that.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for the call. I mean, does it strike you as odd that it would get better briefly and then go back to the way it was as a baseline?
Again, you know, there's so many different things influencing how we're functioning. So sometimes that up and down, we'll see, you know, is it a good night's sleep, or, you know, did somebody have a glass of wine the night before? Sometimes it depends, you know, when we were talking about some of the different types, like a Lewy body dementia, we tend to see good days and bad days as sort of part of the disease course.
Yeah.
So, you know, that absolutely lucid class that, you know, course that she was talking about, I don't see that very frequently, but I guess always nice to have a gift of a day, right?
I guess you're right. Dr. Rebecca Stetzer, we're about done here. How do people find out more about your program at Albany Med?
We have a website for Albany Med that has some details about the Center of Excellence, so that's a great place to start with some numbers to call in. And just for Alzheimer's disease in general, the Alzheimer's Association is just a wonderful resource and can give you lots of information, some guidance, as well as local phone numbers.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Support comes from CHP Berkshires, offering medical and dental care for families and on the road in the Berkshires with CHP Mobile Health Clinics, same-day urgent care, chpberkshires.org/mobile. Once again, thanks to Dr. Rebecca Stetzer of Albany Med for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Bob Rathman, who screened the calls today. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's car maintenance and repair. No amyloid plaques in your transmission, but it still could be bad. Gordon Fricke will be here tomorrow at 2 p.m. We'll see you then.